Hello from Czech Republic. Morning commute. And welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, are races getting so easy that riders are frightened of detraining? Looking at the UAE Tour last week, it appears that could be the case.
Plus, the worst new cycling kit ever. We learn it's never too late to ride, and we take some time to celebrate Si's replacement jockey wheels.
Yes, stay tuned for that.
This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Netflix are missing out big time from pulling out of cycling.
Oh yes, where else would you get a storyline like this in international sport? A group of riders took the wrong road down a finish straight and so missed the finish line completely and ended up sprinting through the spectators instead.
Yeah, that was the Vuelta Algarve last Wednesday, an absolute farce. And I can't imagine that happening in Formula One, for example.
No. I really don't think it would. And now we also learned this week what happens when a super cool streetwear brand does cycling with added SpongeBob SquarePants.
Well, as we all learned a long time ago, Si, you know absolutely nothing about fashion, do you?
No, nor style.
I didn't want to say it, but yes, that's true as well. So Supreme are releasing a number of SpongeBob items this season, and a cycling kit is one of them. Hot or not, Si? Actually, don't you need to answer that? I don't even know why I asked you in the first place.
I am qualified to talk cycling, even if not style or fashion. Hot, Dan.
Right.
But, it has to be part of a complete picture here. So you need a cool bike, you need to be riding in sunny weather, and you also need to be relatively young. So mammals, I'm sorry, you need not apply.
I agree. So, yeah. This kit needs to be worn kind of ironically.
Yes, like my trousers, basically. I think the crucial thing is you can't be old enough to have remembered kit like that first time around, basically, in order to be able to wear it. Now, we also learned this week that short cranks are a trend that is unfortunately coming to us all very soon, whether you like it or not.
Yep, Jonas Vingegaard won a time trial at the Vuelta Algarve on cranks that were 150 millimetres long, or
that
short.
Tiny.
It is tiny, isn't it? Will it change the status quo for normal bike riders, though? Time will tell, but for now, I think it's time we got onto our coffee machine chat from earlier on this morning, which was riveting, Si, wasn't it?
Everyone was coming over, weren't they? Trying to listen in.
Well, I think they were just trying to get a coffee whilst we lingered there, but yeah, let's go with that.
Well, whatever. We were chatting Pogacar and the UAE Tour. Now, for those of you who weren't watching last week, there was a flat stage where Tadej Pogacar went on what could be described only as an inexplicable attack.
And by that, we mean an attack that made absolutely no sense at all if you look at Bike Tactics 101, the big book of bike tactics, or Bike Tactics for Dummies. So the early break of five riders had been quite well established, and it looked to be a conventional sprint stage. And by that, I mean sprinters' teams controlling, ready to bring the break back before the finish and set their sprinter up for the win.
Yeah, it is a script that's as old as televised bike racing. But then that script got ripped up and thrown in the bin. Netflix probably couldn't have improved on that one either, could they? So Pogacar came to the front of the bunch on his teammate's wheel, gave him a little nod when he looked around, and then they both went on the attack together, drawing a handful of others with them. And in quite short order, they had bridged to the front group, and then all of them rode through and off, carving out a gap of over 2 minutes while simultaneously upsetting every sprinter's team behind.
Now, the sprinter's teams did catch them back eventually, albeit their job was made much harder than they'd expected it that morning. But the question is, why did Pogacar go on the attack on a stage where that was always going to be the outcome?
Well, a very good question, Dan. There are two easy and fairly obvious answers to that, aren't there? Number one, he got bored.
Yeah.
And we know how difficult he finds it to sit in a peloton doing nothing. Or two, his team sponsors wanted him to put on a show in their home race.
Or three, the rather less obvious reason, that could be that he wanted a better workout, that he was afraid of detraining over the course of the 7-day race, and therefore heading home with worse condition than he arrived with.
Which sounds inconceivable, doesn't it? But when you start delving into the numbers, you can actually see how this might be the case. So if we start with the days leading up to the race, what do you think, one day of travel, and then Pogacar posted a ride of 116 kilometres on Strava, so that's about 3 hours, wasn't it,
on the 14th of February?
Yeah, good point.
Then he didn't post any more rides, did he, to Strava after that, but I looked at his teammate, Rune Herregaard. He did 85 k's in 2 hours on the 15th of February.
That's quite fast.
It's fast, isn't it, but still only 2 hours, and it was 63 kilometres in an hour and a half the day before the race started.
That's quite fast as well, isn't it?
It is also quite fast, but they're very flat roads and very smooth.
Okay.
Now, as I think I've mentioned, I was there at the race. So I saw the team leaving with Pogacar's bikes on the roof. So I think we can assume he did the same ride as Rune Herregaard and the rest of the team, or something very similar.
Yeah, and then if we go on to the race itself, a total of 23 hours in 7 days. Now, that's not an inconsiderable amount of time on the bike in 1 week, but it's the workload, isn't it, that's more enlightening. So if we take stage six, for example, traditional sprint stage with no crosswinds and no silly breakaways, they completed the 165 kilometres in 3 hours, 45 minutes, an average speed of almost 44k an hour, which is quite fast, isn't it?
It is fast, it's brisk.
Yeah, but the average power was incredibly low for the riders that were sat in the wheels, which is most of them, right?
Well, yeah, because after we got back from our coffee machine chat, we looked on Strava, didn't we?
We found that
Aaron Gate averaged 141 watts for the actual stage, minus the neutral zone. Oscar Onnelly averaged 149 watts, and his heart rate was an average of 109.
109!
I mean, a lot of people would be at that kind of heart rate for a walk around the park.
Yeah, or standing in the queue for the coffee machine whilst we were having a bit of a chat. I think even you could average 144 watts for 3 hours at the minute, couldn't you?
Be touch and go, and I'd probably have to average more than that because I'd have been dropped at the very beginning when they did put out a bit more power.
That's the problem, isn't it? Yeah. Now, if we take a look at stage three as well, that was the first summit finish, wasn't it? There, Onley finished second, but he still only averaged 121 beats per minute for his heart rate and 159 watts. That's for the whole stage, of course. And he is a light rider, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
But probably not that much lighter than Pogacar, I guess.
Not loads, I wouldn't have thought, no.
Yeah. So for either of them, that is a ride that would not have taken a huge amount out of them, even though it was close to 5 hours long.
Well, no. I mean, it's been well publicised, hasn't it, that Pogacar averages north of 300 watts in zone two. So that kind of power that you just quoted is barely going to hit the sides, really. So in conclusion, there's a day's travel, 2 or 3 days of relatively easy rides ahead of the race, depending on when you arrive, and then multiple stages where sitting in the wheels yields an average power akin to a recovery ride, then a travel day home. There's also a time trial, it was only about 15 minutes long. So that's a period then of 10 days there or thereabouts where there are only 2 or 3 hard days, and even then, those hard days aren't that brutal.
Yeah, so you can start to see why some riders might be slightly worried, particularly given the proximity to the spring classics, many of which Pogacar is going to be racing.
Oh, yeah. Strade Bianche, as I was saying to you earlier, is only 2 weeks away. San Remo, 2 weeks after that, I think. And then it's on to Belgium for the cobbled classics and the Ardennes for Pogacar.
Yeah. Well, you have missed one, Dan.
Have I? What's that?
Paris-Roubaix.
Oh! No, surely. Surely he was just baiting us with that Aaron Berg video.
For the lols, the bants, maybe. Back on topic, though, we should probably ask the question, is this the future of bike racing, that riders either have to skip them because they're too easy, or star riders like Pogacar make them more exciting purely for training?
It's an interesting, thought-provoking question, isn't it? I guess it was a unique situation in many respects because, A, the road over at the UAE are the easiest in the world, so pan flat for the most part, very wide, good surface, barely any corners en route, and then B, the best rider in the world right now was racing on those roads. Possibly the best rider ever.
Ooh, shots fired. Belgian viewers are not going to be happy with that one, Dan.
I did say possibly, though, didn't
I? You did, yeah.
Anyway, regardless, what I'm saying is that there aren't many races where even the best riders in the world are finding it easy. By contrast, if you look at sprint stages from the Vuelta Algarve, where Vinegar was, they averaged about 80 to 100 watts more over rolling terrain and narrower, twistier roads. And I'd say that's more typical of similar races in Europe.
Now, does that sprint stage you were talking about include ones where they actually finish going through a finish line or going next to a finish line?
I think both.
Yeah.
Whether or not they go through the actual finish line, that is roughly the average power.
I mean, I suppose it's the training load, isn't it? And not actually whether you complete the stage that's important exactly. for a lot of these guys. Yeah, all right. A bit like Alex Payton. So he did, was it the Mega Pretzel on Zwift?
Uber
Pretzel on Zwift. And Isaac here was appalled because Alex climbed off his bike 4 minutes before getting to the end because he'd
that
done
was
4 hours.
Coffee machine chat that day.
Yeah, it was,
it?
Yeah. And why did you not finish the Uber Pretzel? And he's like, well, I'd done my 4 hours already. Anyway, we do actually know, you mentioned about easy roads in the Middle East. We know how easy they are because you finished top 10 in the Tour of Qatar in Cervelo Test Team days, didn't you?
Well, yeah, top 10, fourth to be precise.
Fourth. Yes. See, case closed.
Well, no. I mean, it was way harder, obviously, back then, Si. Actually, in all seriousness, looking at one of the stages from that 2009 edition, we averaged 53.4 kilometres per hour.
Did you?
Yeah.
How long was the stage?
About 3 hours.
Crikey. I mean, that longer. Is genuinely quite impressive, actually.
Thank you very much. I mean, we had a good race there as a Cervelo testing, and we got five riders in the top six
overall. Nice. Did you win?
No. Tom Bonan beat us.
And didn't you have aero bikes and aero kit before anyone else did?
What's your point?
I don't know. Not much. Anyway, that was. I remember when you did that. I remember being sat in some, I don't know, whatever race I was at that was nowhere near as good as that, thinking, bloody hell, look at that. Mm. Amazing.
I was sat in the race thinking, bloody hell, look at me. I couldn't believe it.
I think, back to the present, there is also a much greater understanding of physiology and training load as well now, isn't it? So teams are able to closely monitor how a rider's training load looks over time and whether it's increasing or decreasing at the right moments, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess the other thing as well that we haven't mentioned just yet, but we probably should, is equipment, because rolling resistance has certainly reduced, aerodynamics of everything has improved. It's making it easier to go faster on the front of the bunch, but I do wonder whether it's also making it easier to sit in the wheels.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Particularly rolling resistance. Have you got any data on that?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't. I don't have...
Okay.
I don't even know if that's a theory that makes scientific sense.
Well, it does,
if I'm perfectly honest.
Doesn't it? If your rolling resistance has decreased by like 20 watts.
Yeah, but they're going faster.
Well, yeah, but you'd still like, it's the wind resistance that increases more, isn't it?
This is the kind of engineering chat we have at the coffee machine, isn't it?
Yes, this is why it takes a long time to get a cup of coffee at GCN Megabase as well, isn't it? Ah, there we go. Right, well, anyway, let us know what you think, OK? Super interested to hear your thoughts. Was Pogacar bored? Was he under pressure from his sponsors? Or is this worry about detraining actually legit? Let us know your thoughts in the comments below.
And whilst you're at it, let us know if you think there's a risk that certain races could be deemed too easy to participate in the future. Very interested to hear your thoughts, as Si said.
That's why I gave the UAE Tour a miss this year. I think it was a bit too easy for me.
Yeah, I didn't bother taking it. Bike.
Did you detrain, though, whilst you were there?
I actually think I did.
Did you?
Didn't go to the gym, and I did two runs.
And you told me what happened when you got back? You sat on the sofa, didn't you, watching bike racing?
Well, yeah. There were four bike races per day on, and I was feeling a bit lazy, so I watched them all.
You detrained, felt tired, so watched bike racing. It's a tough life.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with news of cycling's OG Indy Pro and most celebrated ultra rider, Lachlan Morton. He has added another record to his list, hasn't he, Dan? This time the length of New Zealand's North Island, all 648 kilometres of it.
Which he rode in 18 hours, 26 minutes and 58 seconds, an average of over 35 k's per hour. According to Strava, in that 18 hours and 26 minutes, he was stationary for 2 minutes.
Whoa. There's fewer traffic lights in that 648k than on my 20-kilometre commute home.
No traffic lights, but no nature breaks either, seemingly. Nope. Nor stopping to admire the view, or just stopping for stopping's sake.
No. Something you'd better get used to, Dan, because that is the life of an ultra rider, and that is going to be your fate on the Manchester to London ride this summer. Woo! How is training going? We obviously touched on it a moment ago.
Yes, starts in March.
Really? So those two rides that you did, they were just like little testers.
They were little testers. No, I was actually saying to Isaac this morning, before you managed to get to work.
Pre-coffee machine chat.
Exactly. That in the back of my head, I've always said March. Partly because it feels like a nice amount of time before the ride in June, and partly because the weather gets a lot better, presumably.
Well, it's not many...
4 months.
Is it the end of June, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Four long months.
Yeah.
Longer than February.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that form will come back quick, won't it?
Yeah.
Because it's all in the bank.
A bit better. Yeah. That's what I'm banking on.
Yeah. Right, now, in your absence last week, Dan, Alex was taking the mick out of me for being
was
old.
Was he?
Yeah, he was, because he is obviously younger than me, unfortunately, and I admitted to being old, but I got called out for this in the comments by Bjo108.
Oh, you did, yes, yeah. Who said, "The way you go on about your age is cringing. What are you going to be like when you're 50 or even 60?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It is a valid point. And honestly, I don't know what I'm going to be like when I'm 50 or 60.
So
I take that criticism and I apologise. And this next news item definitely puts things into perspective, because we should say happy birthday to Poppy John, who celebrated his 86th birthday with a cafe ride with his mates.
Happy birthday.
How cool is that?
Yeah, he's part of the Urunga Cycling Club, which apparently has a growing chapter for its members over 80. Apparently also, he took up the sport at the ripe old age of 67.
That
the
is
ripe young age, maybe.
Brilliant, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Super cool. Now, speaking of taking up cycling later, I was reading just this morning about US baseball legend Barry Bonds, who is now apparently a mad keen bike rider, has been for a while. The SF Gate had an article about it, including how he is racking up Strava KOMs at the age of 59.
Impressive. Very he must impressive. Be famous, because even I've heard of Barry Bonds. Another veteran sports star making waves in cycling, Belgian former football player Jelle Van Damme, is now on a gravel race team with Greg Van Avermaet, I noticed as well.
Yeah, another speedy veteran. Now, we've got a couple of get well soons planned out this week. Well, we do, yeah, because almost literally the week after just how awesome it was that Egan Bernal, former Tour de France winner, was getting back to his best. He's crashed and broken his collarbone.
Yeah. Hopefully he won't lose too much momentum, because he was looking good, wasn't he?
He was.
National champs. And he'll be back on it soon. Certainly with his wins in Colombia, Michał Kwiatkowski taking a win at Classica High End and Josh Tarling winning the time trial in the UAE, talk of the instant demise of the Ineos Grenadiers team is at least on hold for a couple of days.
Yes. I can't wait to see how that unfolds, Dan. Cycling might be a ray of hope for the vast and apparently struggling Ineos sporting empire. They're fighting fires on a few fronts, aren't they?
They are.
Back to the get well soons, though. Second one, Chris Froome has just befallen the same fate as Egan Bernal, but at the UAE Tour. Now, given his age, sorry, Bjo108, but I think we have to say that in the professional athletes context. Given his age, questions are going to be asked as to whether he's going to be able to get back.
Well, give the man a chance, Si. He's got another 41 years to join Poppy John's cycling club.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what you mean.
No, fair enough.
Carlos Rodriguez of Ineos Grenadiers broke his collarbone on the same stage over at the UAE, so another get well soon.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Okay, some tech news for you now, and we're keeping a beady eye on super expensive bike products for you.
Yes. You're welcome. The upgrade you now need to make to your new $15,000 gravel bike is a new rear derailleur cage and jockey wheel set from Ceramic Speed. Now, this is designed to retrofit to a $700 SRAM Red Access Explore derailleur, and it will cost you only an additional $669. Yeah.
Looks nice.
It does look nice, doesn't it? Better than the replacement jockey wheels that I bought for my bike last week, although they cost me 51 times less.
Fantastic. Anyway, if money is no object, there is zero issue with expensive bike components. I'm glad they exist.
I'm glad they exist.
I still think we should champion $13 replacement jockey wheels.
That was quick maths, Dan.
But math is my strong point.
Well, there you go, yeah. I'm not sure my replacement jockey wheels expected to be championed when I bought them, but I will pass the message on to them.
Okay.
They performed flawlessly on their first ride. They just looked very boring.
Hack. / bodge of the week now. We're actually going to start with an update from one that we featured on last week's show, Si.
That's right. So this is from Costa Trees, who had the mini pump attached to the front of his bike like a unicorn. Anyway, Costa Trees, thank you very much for the comments. He said, "To everyone concerned about my pump, that was obviously a joke, and I am riding with it attached to the saddlebag. Looks way more neat, but not as entertaining. So I think we can all rest easy now."
Yeah.
Because he's got a very, very nice bike.
Very good.
It did look a little bit.
Well, if any of you that we sort of pull apart in Hack and Bodge want to give an update in the comments, please feel free each week.
That's it, yeah.
Speaking of which, Jason Ellis. A hack with a bodge, screw-fix garden pump action hose, remove the inner hose and put into the nozzle to use as a flexible adapt. to get to the Prester valve. 6mm drilled hole, Muckoff tubeless valve from Halfords, PTFE on the inside to further improve the seal, PTFE on the outer, under the rubber, wash ring and nut. Works great for mountain bike. Yeah, let's try and gravel. Next go will be on an empty fire extinguisher for more PSI, as the blow off of the current one is kicking in at 35-37 PSI, which is around 4 bars.
Crikey, right, that's a lot of information. We're basically looking at a tubeless inflator here, are we? Okay. Only if it works, I'm going to say hack, because there's nothing more annoying than struggling to get a tubeless tyre seated.
There's not. I mean, I've not done it much, but I actually bought myself a specific pump, and I can see why you do this, because the pump was not cheap. Even then, I was getting frustrated. Crikey, it took me a few times to get to mount it.
Fortunately, those days of tubeless frustrations are getting fewer, right. I think. But anyway, yeah, oh, I think that's probably a hack if it works, isn't it?
Well done.
You know, you mentioned Screwfix there. I was chatting to my wife about this just yesterday. I worked for Screwfix Direct in their telesales department for 4 weeks, and it's technically the last proper job I had. Before getting paid to ride bikes, and now ride bikes and talk about bikes. So there we go. We've got to go quite a long time ago. Telesales isn't really a thing anymore, is it?
No. One of Carlton Kirby's favourite jokes involves Screwfix.
Oh, God.
So, I rang Screwfix the other day. Turns out it's not a dating agency.
Oh, God. Carlton Kirby. Right, okay. Moving on. We got this one sent in...
From Hack.
From Hack,
I mean, that's very presumptuous calling yourself Hack, isn't it?
It is. I transformed my old Kestrel bike frame to a Zwift bike. I was not using it and got tired of switching bikes on the trainer, so I got a single-speed chain tensioner and built the something back.
Hack.
Oh, yeah, it's cool. The only thing that's slightly upsetting me about this is the rear brake's still attached, which you don't need anymore. And also, it's not on the big chainring. Like, aesthetically speaking, I would want to ride my indoor training bike more if it was in the big chainring, because instantly...
You feel faster.
You feel faster. The bike looks faster, even indoors.
It's the great thing about compact chainring, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I ride around going, I tell you what, it's weird how I'm still as fast as I was when I was full-time racing.
Exactly. Even I almost feel the same.
Well, you got a SRAM 45 on there or something.
Even though I'm 1 year too old to be classed as a millennial, as we discovered before we started recording, I can still ride big ring about halfway down the block on a flat road.
Yeah.
Only if the big ring's 50.
What are you if you're not a millennial? Are you like a boomer?
I don't know. I get very confused with Gen Z, Gen X, millennials.
So, it happens whatever. At your age, mate. Sorry, yes, BJ108, I'm sorry. Dan is only 44, appreciate that.
I'll find out from my son when I get back what I am.
And there's a thing called Google these days.
True.
It tells you everything. Right, what are we saying for that one? A hack.
I'll go hack, yeah.
Stick it in the big ring, please.
Well, that doesn't bother me. I'm going hack either
way. All right. Okay, who's next, mate?
Morku Bikes.
Oh, yeah.
Easy to use washstand, battery-powered washer. Power washer. Bodge.
Yes, this is a very nice gravel bike from 3T hung in a tree whilst he cleans it. I mean, if it works, why not?
It's quite high up. I mean, surely there's a tree with a lower branch.
Well, I don't know, like for the perspective of that photo, can you tell? Because, I mean, it depends how big the bucket is, isn't it? Like, we've got a bucket in the foreground, potentially. If it's a small bucket, then I think we can establish that bike's not very high in the tree.
I'm still going bodge.
Tough to know. All right.
I mean, if you can afford that bike, surely you can afford to
have
purchase some equipment to help look after it.
Yeah, all right. That's a fair call. Ah, okay, I'm going to say bodge as well then. I'm just going to go with the herd today.
Don't forget Morku Bikes. You have a right to reply in the comments.
You do indeed.
An update.
Yeah, well, this is a development. I'm not sure I thought through, Dan. Right, Matthew Rittenhouse. The bike I wanted, a Trek Domani SL5. The only problem, there was only matte black in my size. I'm not a fan of the murdered out look and wanted a bike with a bit more colour, but the deal was too good to pass up. However, I had some red vinyl wrap, the type used on cars, so I decided to add some colour to the rather dull matte black. And here you go. Dragonfire metallic red vinyl accents on the top tube, the seat stays and the fork blades. And actually, that looks blooming good, doesn't it?
It does look very professional.
It looks as Trek intended.
It does, yeah. Yeah, I'd never have known had you just shown that to me, whether it wasn't an off-the-shelf colour-coded bike. I like the last bit. I hope you consider my work a hack, as it significantly changed the look of my bike with only a minor use of my time.
There you go. And if I decided, Matthew says, and I wanted a different colour, I can peel off the vinyl and apply a new one. Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be said for vinyl wrapped on bikes.
I think so too.
There you go. That's cool. We're going to say hack then.
I'm going to say hack definitely. Yeah.
Definitely a hack, yeah.
Great. Thanks for submitting all your hacks and bodges over the last week. Don't forget, this is the part of the show that you can get involved in, amongst others. All you need to do is go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader and you'll be able to submit your hacks and bodges or those that you've seen out and about there.
Time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you pretty shortly after we've done the results from last week.
This was last week's photo. For those of you listening in, it's a picture of Ben Tulett off the bike pushing at the Classica High-End.
I totally nailed the caption last week, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Which was?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
But definitely nailed it.
Speaking of nailing the caption, well done to Paul Glynn, who put, "Oi, Tulett, when the DS yelled push, 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 this ain't what he meant."
Oh, I like that. That's very good, Paul. Right, get in touch, Paul, and we will get your Camelback water bottle out to you.
This week's photo comes from the UAE tour. This is Tadej Pogacar with a fairly lonely-looking rock just behind him, isn't it?
Yeah.
I will get you started. Tadej saying, "Do you ever feel like you're just stuck between a rock and a hard place?"
See what you did there, mate.
Thanks.
Not bad.
Couldn't come up with anything better.
Well, you did have a hard week last week, mate, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
At the UAE tour.
I did tell you, I was at the UAE tour.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And probably had a hard day watching four bike races at the weekend.
I'm feeling the fatigue.
Yeah, I bet, mate. All right, get in touch if you think that you can better Dan's caption. Stick your comment in the caption.
In the comment below.
That's the one.
We will shortly let you know what's coming up on GCN this week. Spoiler alert, episode 3 of the Zwift Academy. We will live on Saturday at 5 p.m. GMT. Speaking of which, we're going to start with a few comments that came under episode 2, which was premiered last Saturday.
It was indeed. So, first of all, I picked this one out from Nick Anjay. Dan, stay within your limits, guys. Keep it smooth and safe. And Christoph, the director sportif for Alpecin De Koenig, faster, faster, don't break, don't break.
That is going to be used as a meme, isn't
oh
it?
Oh, my goodness me. So good.
Copyright it, I think.
Yeah. Can we stress that him saying faster, faster, don't break, don't break did not coincide with the guys falling off?
Oh, no.
It was
sometime after.
Sometime afterwards, yeah, when the track was dried out.
Road Cyclist 1 put, yeah, GCN are overly afraid of everything. They didn't even show those minor crashes.
I love this. I don't know why it tickled me so much. I wouldn't say we are afraid of everything.
No, most really. Things. Yeah. Not everything.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, like, you and me are afraid of quite a lot of things. Hank, he's not afraid.
No.
Not at all. And then Breakaway B said, made my armpits sweat just watching some of those corners. Funny enough.
Mine too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, no, genuinely mine. That is why I was kind of there staying safe. At least I could speak when I was out there to the contestants.
You did look a little bit like a concerned dad out there. Like, right, guys, please, not on my watch.
Well, I got to this track. I've been told to call it a kart track, not a go-kart track. I need to look up why that is. But anyway, to the kart track and sort of did the sort of foot-on-floor test and thought, there is no way they're going to let the contestants, let alone their own pro riders, set a hot lap around this thing. It was so greasy. And then Christoph got there and did the same thing. Went, yeah, it should be fine. But yeah, I was there with my heart in my mouth thinking, crikey, it's, I don't know, sign of age, sign of being a year older than the millennial category, I think.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, millennials, we didn't have a problem with that at all.
No.
Let alone Gen anyway. Z, yeah. And then Eric Rosserman said, I'm excited to see Si wearing those jeans again in the next episode. Not sure I can wait a week.
There were quite a few comments about your jeans.
Yeah, there were.
Trainers, I think.
Yeah, my trainers, yeah. I mean, I'm wearing both today, but thankfully you lot can't see them. I was pleased to see, though, that there were almost as many comments about Noah's helmet
straps. Oh, yes, there were.
As well.
That really aggravated people.
Yeah, Dr. Scoop...
deflected some of the scrutiny from your jeans.
It did, yeah. I mean, there might actually have been the same people concerned about my sartorial elegance and Noah's. But anyway, he said, Noah's a great rider. I just wish he'd adjust his helmet straps properly. I mean, probably Noah's watching it back going like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Did no one tell me that my helmet straps look like that? So, yeah, I blame Dan personally for that one.
Yeah. Si hasn't bought in new jeans as of yet. We also got told off for having our phones in our front pockets whilst presenting.
Specifically me, I got told off for having... Well, I think you got away with it.
Did I?
Yeah, it was just me.
Probably put mine in my back pocket like a pro.
Yeah, you did. Well, either that or just kick a man while he's down, when he's...
Anyway, moving on to some comments from underneath last week's show. Loads of awesome commenters and viewers saying that they already do engage with their local authorities and government with an impressive array of achievements amongst you. I can't read all the comments out, but well done to Robin Forder, Citizen Wolf, Michael Fleming, Rocky Talking the Woods, Michael W, Zev Robbins, C.R. Bondeur, Ethan Swanson, Fred Johnson, to name just a few of you.
Yeah, it was so cool, actually, genuinely, to see people going, hey, I do already, and this is what's been happening. So, yeah, ammunition for the rest of us to maybe get involved. Send some letters, send some emails. In fact, Banksy1968 said, I work in a local authority delivering acts of travel interventions, and you were spot on. The very noisy minority make it very difficult to construct / implement anything. Compounding the fact is this noisy minority also make their views known to councillors. Therefore, we get little support from them either, as they feel vulnerable in making bold decisions. So anyway, some great advice there. Basically, support active travel and make yourself known, which is super cool, isn't it?
Bevan James O put, there's a huge opportunity for GCN to make a change in the motor normacy realm. Massively important, you guys should think of a way to inspire / help people in all parts of the world in order to improve safety for cyclists.
I thought we should put this one in because obviously we will be thinking about it, as we have been doing, but if you guys can think of anything as well, get involved in the comments section.
Yeah.
Any suggestions for us, whether that's, I don't know, videos we can make, people to talk to, whatever. Be super interested.
And we'll try and find them in and amongst the Hack and Bodge updates from our other viewers.
Yeah. And then, unsurprisingly perhaps, there was a lot of comments under the video about cycling safety and risks. Tingly Dingle said, the starkest thing I've learned about daily life being an NHS paramedic, so that's a paramedic here in the UK, is how much abject poverty some people are living in. But the second most startling thing is how badly people underestimate the risks of driving. It's probably the riskiest thing we do every day. Far more dangerous than many of the activities we consider to be dangerous, and yet no one thinks twice about doing it.
No.
So that was interesting with, like, you know, obviously we're not talking statistics, we're talking someone's experiences, but someone literally on the front line of road traffic accidents like that.
It would make you think more about it, wouldn't it? It's a strange thing with driving. I think it's because you feel like you're in control, but you look at the statistics compared to flying, even though you're not in control of the aircraft.
It's like you've mind-read the comment from Channel7681.
Yeah, I think the fear has to do with control. You feel like you... I didn't even read that.
Well,
probably should have done because it was my turn to read the comment out. But you feel like you're in control of your car even though you aren't, but on a plane or on a bike, you feel like your fate isn't in your hands. That is really spooky. I genuinely hadn't read that.
Yeah, deja vu. But no, I think both of you are right, actually. And then this one I was very interested in. So this is from Anthony Alteri. Here's the thing with spiders. If you grow up around things that will kill you, you haven't watched my video, have you?
I did, yeah, I think I have. I did, maybe recall something about spiders.
Yeah. If you grow up around things that will kill you, you learn about those things and form a healthy respect for them. So you know how to avoid them, how to be around them, and which ones are venomous, brackets, not poisonous. Sorry, Si. Stand corrected. But if you do not grow up around them, you really have to no need to learn about them. So that awareness and understanding lacks. Fear often comes from a lack of understanding, which I thought was super interesting. And also someone else from Australia commented that actually no one's died from spider bite since about 1950-something because they've got anti-venom.
Oh, I might go over there after all then.
Yeah, no, snakes. I think people still die of snake bites.
I'll stay here.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I'm joking, obviously. Right, what's coming up on the channel this week? On Wednesday, Si's going to find out whether 3 years on, his cargo bike has essentially paid for itself.
I'm waiting to see what happens when I get it back from the bike shop after its first ever service. On Friday, I'm really excited about this, right? Alex Payton has thrown his hat into the ring And he's going to have a proper crack at Unbound.
He's training blooming hard for
it. He's training blooming hard for it, yes. He and I went out to try and do a mini Unbound, very, very mini, to see what it involves going at like proper pace.
Yeah.
And good luck to him.
When is Unbound?
Oh, it's like June the 1st-ish, I think.
Oh, he's starting training quite early then.
I mean, some might say...
It's 4 weeks before my ride.
Well, I don't know where he's going to get to. He completed his Uber pretzel this week.
He did, yeah, under 4 hours too.
In under 4 hours, yeah. And he said he averaged 280 watts,
whoa,
not normalised, 280 watts, and he had to do the last hour at 300 to make sure he finished in under 4 hours. I know, that's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He said he walked out of his garage with an armful of bottles and gels and started to question his sanity.
Well, yeah, I would as well. 4 hours at 280 watts.
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Marginally below my best ever as a pro.
No traffic lights on Zwift, though. No traffic lights.
Still.
Right, and then, speaking of Zwift, on Saturday, Zwift Academy Finals, episode 3.
Zwift Academy.
Oh, yeah, Zwift Academy.
That was the outtake.
Yes. Episode 3. Should we have a little sneaky peek?
Yeah, let's go for it.
In episode 3, the male contestants take on the Alpecin de Koenig lead-out train.
Yeah, I can't mess up today.
While the women are again pitted against Zoe Baxton, but this time on a climb, head to head.
Oh, is she coming round her?
Up. They were all coming for me.
And then finally, all the contestants march into the Zwift Arena for a special kind of race.
Come on, Annabelle, come on, let's go.
Where they will line up not as rivals, but as teammates in support of some very special guests.
Matthew, please come in. Good luck, guys.
I hope that's whetted your appetite. It's been really good, hasn't it, to see the positive comments underneath the first two episodes, and that almost all the people that have watched episode one are watching episode two as well. So we loved filming it, didn't we?
Yeah.
Some unbelievable stories and backgrounds, and also riding from the contestants over the 4 days. So, yeah. I'm looking forward. I've been watching them again.
Yeah, me too.
Have you?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a privilege witnessing, well, not only like the pros taking such an interest in it, but the finalists themselves, just obviously how committed they are and how, you know, well, they're all super nice and friendly, but they also really know what's at stake. And
yeah.
You feel like you're genuinely watching something quite meaningful. It's great.
Brilliant. Well, that is out, to remind you, should I say, on Saturday at 1700 GMT. So subtract or add on hours wherever you are in the world.
We're not as good at maths as you, mate, most of us.
Right, with that, thanks for watching. We'll see you again next week.